I played a ton of Pogs.
I still, to this day, cannot tell you the rules of Pogs.
Nope.
But damn, my collection of Pogs was legit.
What is a Pog?
It's a cardboard circle wafer.
It's a cardboard circle.
Okay, no, I do. My brother did have these. I never did.
And you'd like throw the metal circle onto the stack.
A slammer.
A slammer, yeah. man, that was like, I mean, we were gambling in the playground.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing, but I had them and I played with them, and I don't know. Same thing with Pokemon cards. Like, I played Pokemon, but I was like, I didn't know what I was doing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Can We Save the Cat, your weekly Writer's Room and Entertainment podcast, where we take three random thoughts or ideas, pitch them, pick one, and over the course of about 30 minutes or so, workshop it into the next big thing. In the end, we will decide if we want to save the cat as something we would pursue or scratch it for the next big idea. This week, we are very, very excited to have author Andrew J. Brandt with us. He is the author of Palo Duro, a number one Amazon bestseller and YA Novel of the Year nominee. So, Andrew, we are very excited for you to be joining us this week.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you for the time and for hanging out with me today. I'm really excited.
Absolutely. We're super excited. And as always, I am one of your hosts, Brian Hayes.
I'm another one of your hosts, Danny Hanks.
I'm the other host, Justin Eugene. And I just want to say, Andrew has a new book coming out. It looks amazing. I've heard great things. So you guys pre-order that now.
Thank you. Yeah, it's Mixtape for the End of the World. It comes out May 18th.
Sounds fitting. Sounds very fitting.
It's set in 1999. It's set in the last 3 months of 99. And it's about high schoolers starting a garage band, falling in love with the girl next door kind of thing. But also everybody's freaking out that Y2K is going to ruin their lives.
Oh, the best year ever.
The best year
ever. I love that. See, I missed that by like a few years. But then when I was a teenager, like me and my friends, we were like, we should make a movie about Y2K because we didn't have anything else. We were like, oh, yeah, that's going to be great. Meanwhile, we were, you know, five when it happened or whatever. So
I was in that classic age where, like, we were starting to, like, talk to and like girls. Maybe one or two people had a girlfriend. So there was a conversation, dude, we might die this year. We have to find a way to have a kiss on New Year's because what if we die?
See,
you need this.
Yeah. Here's what's wild. I remember Y2K very differently. I remember Y2K being this, like, everybody like burying their money and everybody just really worried, not necessarily about the world ending, but about like
electricity and everything shutting off.
The advancements of technology collapsing. Yeah. It was like electricity getting shut off. So that
living in the boonies where I was, we thought we were going to die because without technology, we had nothing.
Like apparently Y2K was a real threat and just a bunch of programmers actually fixed everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They had it fixed even before the year 1999 kind of rolled around.
But the media got involved and made it a big thing.
Yeah.
That's unusual. It's very rare that the media would like overemphasize something.
No, they wouldn't do that.
The media? What? Never.
Never.
Those little guys.
Speaking of little guys.
Oh, God.
I think it's time for us to get through some pitches.
Oh my gosh. That was a horrible segue.
All right. Well, we'll start with these three little guys. And I guess I don't know. Who wants to go first?
You.
Great. So I'll go first.
How dare you?
I'm the first little guy. So my pitch this week is really weird, really random. But I was thinking of, for those of you who don't know, I work at NYU Langone. And at NYU Langone recently, there was the first full face transplant of somebody who I believe had been burned with acid. And it was making me think of like, and I'm not sure whether it would go in a rom-com direction or like a horrible thriller Minority Report sci-fi-esque direction. But I was thinking of like somebody who is blind feeling their partner's new face for the first time and how that could be like
kind of jarring.
Amazing or horrible. Or jarring.
Yeah.
Because it could also be that she doesn't know who this person is, and then it's the same person because their voice sounds the same, but he's like, I'm not the same person. Feel my face. I don't know. Interesting. That's what I got. Somebody gets a face transplant and somebody feels it.
All right. So who wants to follow that?
Well, I'll follow that because, I mean, Jesus. Mine's about replacing people's faces on teenagers.
I'm sorry, okay?
I'm not sorry. It was a unique pitch that many people would turn down. So we haven't done like a TV show in a while, so I'm pitching a TV show. I want to do something pretty simple, but though I've never actually seen this show, I think I get the premise. Hannah Montana, a social media person who like becomes like really popular but wants to live their own life and has like a social media basically presence, and then like their regular life they're somebody else, and that whole like going through, let's say, high school with like living those two different lives, not over the top crazy like a CIA agent for like Disney, but something that makes sense.
So a modern day TikTok Hannah Montana.
Yeah, I think so. I honestly didn't see Hannah Montana, so I don't really know what it is.
It's literally that. It's literally what you just what you just pitched.
It did work. I would like to say this. That show did work, apparently.
Was Hannah Montana Nick or Disney?
It was Disney.
It was Disney? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it was. It took me a second.
iCarly was Nick.
Yes.
There we go.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. iCarly was Nick. Yeah, because that's going on Paramount.
I saw the other day. It's now streaming on Netflix.
I saw that. I don't know what the show is, but it's very, really popular now. Is it just like a Disney like high school soap?
No. It's Nick.
No.
Oh, sorry. Nickelodeon.
All right, Brian, what you got for us?
Yeah. So, wouldn't it be weird in a small town if you have a bunch of people in like their mid-30s, early 40s who were all still single? And so they're at this weird point where like they've dated each other and it hasn't worked out. And so now like they just have to redate each other. And so I would like a film or something like that based in a small town where there's not a lot of options. And so you're forced to redate these people and walk down this path of like, what happened? Why didn't this work out before? And maybe, you know, somewhere in there's an actual rom-com where two people that never actually got around to dating because they were best friends for so long end up connecting. So,
yeah, I like that. Perfect. We'll just do a docuseries about Justin's life.
Yeah, I feel like you're making fun of people that are single in their 30s.
Absolutely not. I just think it's really like what happens in a small town?
My life is so interesting, Brian. Thank you so much. Partly this sounds like a great reality show, too.
Well, okay, so my biggest thing is, like, we
just
grew up...
Just put, like, 7-8 people in, like, a town and trap them for 6 months, see what happens.
No. So I was thinking more, like, we grew up in a small-ish town, and in a lot of
Well, more importantly, you two got out, but continue.
We did. We were very fortunate to get out. But I was just thinking about these small towns and, like, the people that didn't get out... These graduating classes are like 60. So the dating options whenever you get older are very, very limited. And so I was just like, what would happen if just a bunch of people never found that connection, but they never really ventured out? So, yeah.
I found it. It's 90 Day Fiancé.
Well, Brian,
it's
quite interesting.
Yeah. So.
All right, Andrew.
All right. I'm pitching a movie called Pack of Smokes. Jesse Dyer is finally doing it. He's told his wife of 7 years he's going out for a pack of smokes, but he ain't coming back. He's heading west. So his plan is to stop in Albuquerque. He's going to sell his car and then use that money to buy a train ticket out to LA. But when he's seduced and then taken hostage by two women who intend to sell his organs on the black market, he finds himself strapped to a bed, tortured and beaten while awaiting his fate. During all this, he's visited by three ghosts, ghosts of the life he left behind, ghosts of the life he abandoned, and the ghost of what could have been. So will Jesse find the strength and the will to escape his captors and return home?
You hit so many tropes for Brian and Danny. It's like there's no other fucking voting in anything else.
Walter White meets Scrooge. Yes.
All right.
All right, I'll start. We'll go in the order that we voted, that we pitched in. Yeah. I'll start. The second you said selling his organs on the black market, you caught me. So I'm voting yours.
The second you said gets caught in Albuquerque, you got me. So, yeah, I actually love Albuquerque. A screenplay that I'm working on has a big scene in Albuquerque. So anyway, yeah, easily.
I also am voting for it. It does seem a little fleshed out. So I'll be interested to see how you handle us messing with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it sounds fun. I think anytime you like, you throw in a twist like that, because I mean, you like to write thrillers. So like, I'm always on board for a thriller. So yeah, it'll be very interesting.
And when I was thinking this idea, I thought it could go either a thriller direction, you know, or almost like a black comedy.
That's 100% what I was thinking.
Hey, you got me there.
Dark comedy is Danny's like,
yeah.
She just found out what End of the World was, so she's freaking out lately about dark comedy.
End of the effing world, but anyway. Andrew, now you have to vote for somebody.
Yeah, ceremonial purposes.
For ceremonial purposes. I was actually really interested in TikTok Hannah Montana.
All right.
I would want
to
see.
I like to put in the notes, Justin technically would have won.
This episode's over.
I would like to see a reboot of Hannah Montana in the TikTok era. I think that'd be really cool.
All right. Well, let's jump right into it. Okay, so immediately my thing is like, we kind of already have a little bit of a journey here. We have our main guy who's going to go out for a pack of smokes, and then we have the two women. And I'm almost like, in the same way of Walter White, Breaking Bad, who's the best person that we can put in this situation to like finally be taken and have his life fucked over? And then who are these women?
Why is he going out west?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to start with is who is Jesse? Why is he deciding to leave his wife? And more importantly, why is he so dramatic, like something I would do, which is just like, I'm packing up, I'm heading out west. Like, what is this motivation?
Yeah, I don't know. Coming up with the idea this week.
I was more thinking like, what's the time period frame too? Because you said cigarettes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like,
I was thinking like mid-70s.
Okay, yeah, when you pitched, I was almost thinking like 70s, 80s. I was like, a pack of six. Yeah. Like, you don't hear that now.
Yeah.
I'm going out to like get a vape pen, maybe. So, yeah, so I think that changes what they want to do in California, because like, it could be music, it could be film, it could be like just getting out of that town.
What's his age?
What's his age?
He's married.
He's married. I always kind of saw him as I was doing this. I saw Jesse kind of in his mid 30s, where. He is past his youth now, and he's past that point of expecting, you know, something more, and there was nothing more. And so he's kind of deluded by that, to one day he finally breaks and he says, you know, going out for a pack of smokes and just leaves.
Part of me thinks music, like he's going there to like, yeah. We got out of a small town, the wife won't let him tour with like his friends, like he's just gotta go and just do it on his own.
I even think it's more interesting if, like, he's, like, a guitarist by night.
Yeah.
You know, we could go the Walter White angle and he's a professor or whatever. Something painfully boring.
I think he's an accountant. Like, making really boring.
Let's make him so boring. He's the guy that changes the printer ink in the Xerox machine at the office.
There we go. Like, so, he has this soul-sucking
job.
Awful job.
And he just wants to play his guitar.
Yeah, and I think it's almost funnier if like he doesn't actually have a foundation or anything. I don't even think he needs to be that good. I think it's funnier if he's not that good and he's like, I'm going to go across the United States and I'm going to be a musician.
Well, so Andrew, walk me through, okay, the three ghosts again.
Okay, so the ghost, the life he left behind, which I assume would, in my head, you know, he's
wife
visited.
And kids.
By the wife, you know, maybe an image or a vision of his wife saying, why did you leave? The life he abandoned. So the next one would be old man, him. Like, man, we lived a good life and you fucked it up, you know. And then what could have been. And I always imagine that like Jesse is deluded because he's got the wife, but there's no kids. They've never been able to have a kid. He's missing something from his life. And so that final ghost is a little boy that says, I was supposed to be. And because of the decisions you made, I no longer am. And
dark comedies.
So I'm going to throw a bit of a curveball at us, because
no,
what I would think would be really interesting is to take that trope of the three ghosts that visit him and actually titrate those into physical characters that he comes across in trying to escape, where they're more symbolic and less of a play structure Scrooge actually visited by ghosts. But it's like taking that theme and having those three characters just be externalized.
Brian hates it. Go.
No. So I'm going to counter, because that's actually what I was thinking, is an actual manifestation of these three versus them being ghosts. Like, these are actual physical people. They could very well be figments of his imagination. But my question to that is, where is he being held? Is there an option for him to, is it like a facility that he can kind of make his way out of with the help of these manifestations or whatever, or actual characters? And then three is like, what ends up, like, I feel like we need to figure out what happens to Jesse in the end and then work our way backwards. Because if he dies and all of this was just him reconciling with death in the end, that could be really interesting. Or if it's him and he gets in his car and he goes back, like, it might be a little bit trite, but it would be cool as well. You know, I want to figure out where we end up and then work our way back with what happens in this middle part.
Concept. So one thing that might be interesting is, and of course the facility and everything will be dependent on who these women are that have kidnapped him, but you could play with something like bad version. The old man that he meets is the person that is getting the organs that they're trying to steal from him. Like, the people that he's coming into contact with are, he's totally fucked. They're going to do an open operation and take his organs in this black market way. But the woman that he's meeting is the grandfather's daughter, and she is the person who has that influence. And then there's the grandfather who's going to be having the organ transplant, but he doesn't know that it's coming from unethical means. And then the kid who finds out and kind of saves the day and lets him escape while the three of them teach him. And then it's the story of, you know, loss when eventually he does escape. And then the kid also has an emotional turmoil of, like, does he let them take the organ so his grandpa can live, or does he let this guy go? I don't know.
Movie written.
So my idea would be that...
Brian, do you want him to die?
Do you want Jesse to die?
I kind of want Jesse to die. And so here's how I would do it. I would have him actually in this underground wherever, and as he's attempting to escape, he thinks he's in a hospital and these two women are his doctors, but it's clearly that he is just drugged out of his mind, especially if we're going dark comedy with it. And so he could, like, end up in a room with an old man, and he's imagining that this old man is giving him some sage advice. And he's imagining that his wife is talking to him and being like, come home. Like, why did you leave me? And he's having this conversation. And then we cut in between reality. And reality is, it's a woman who's sitting in a chair, like she's mute or something, just staring out a window. But he's having this entire conversation with her. And the old man is like
she's blind and like...
Yeah, like the old man is like comatose, lying on a bed. And he's having this conversation with the life he abandoned or whatever. And the little kid is just like, I don't even know how you could get a little kid in the actual laboratory where these women are working. And that's what I mean, is like,
and even still, like, I don't know if these two women are the ones that are there in the facility, or if they're just the mules who are supposed to get the guy. Like, we have to seduce him to get him to come back to our place. We drug him, and then he wakes up, you know, strapped to a bed somewhere, just getting tortured.
I'm just going to toy with this a little bit. I'm a little bit intrigued by, maybe we follow, in the realm of dark comedy, a lot of dark comedy is based heavily around character. And something that comes to mind for me is, who are these women? And I think it's more powerful potentially if they are directly involved and they more have a hand in things. So something curious that comes up for me is, like, what if this guy has basically given up everything? Right? He's a provider for his wife. He's a blood donor. He's whatever. And he's kind of doing it because he knows it's the right thing. And he is signed up to be on the transplant list for a kidney or for bone marrow or for whatever. And he's supposed to show up, right, to do this thing and be selfless and be all this stuff. But of course, he's only doing that because of appearances. And then he finally decides, I'm going to go out for a pack of smokes and I'm going to leave. But the people who were going to receive that organ are like, you're telling me this guy just up and left, and they kind of conspire to capture him. And it's this moral conundrum of like he was going to give it anyway, so they're trying to convince him to give it again, And you could play with that. And you could also have the interplay of what their relationship is, where one of them is the doctor. And she clearly hacked the system to find out this person's name and blood type and then kidnapped him. And in seeing this woman and this grandfather and this kid, he could go through. And I mean, then he doesn't have to die. He could end up giving the kidney because he only need one.
What if he's the wrong candidate? What if that's like the ending, like twist where it's like,
they kill grandpa. Oh
God. I think,
I'm just saying, dark comedy.
I think if you go that route, Danny, it would be more interesting to me. So I'm imagining it. What you're saying is like, it's almost like I could kind of see like a funny car chase where, yeah, the people from the hospital are chasing him down and following in his footsteps. And meanwhile, he's just trying to get out to California and he's manifesting these ghosts or whatever in the car next to him and having these conversations with his wife and a little kid and the old man and everything. And so
like, yeah, I mean, I would stray away from the car chase and instead have it be more immediate in that in the first act of the movie, they capture him, they seduce him, or even one of them seduces him, brings him in and brings him to the other who's the doctor and is like, here's the guy who was going to donate. And he's like, what the fuck, man? And so they have to actually face that conversation. And of course, they're going to be doing it in like a warehouse. So that's the process of like, they're going out to prep all this stuff. Meanwhile, he's living in the basement of this normal home in the middle of Albuquerque, New Mexico. You know, the grandpa lives there, the mom lives there, the kid lives there, while these two sisters are going out trying to get the medical supplies to do an in-house operation. I mean, it's definitely way more comedy.
Yeah, my issue with that is like, I struggle with how you connect Jesse to these ghosts or manifestations or actual physical people. And I feel like that's like the most interesting part because it is like a shitty person's Christmas Carol.
Yeah. And I thought really that it was like a shitty person's Christmas Carol, but also dealing with your own decisions.
Yeah.
You know, they say like, you know, at the end of your life, you know, your life flashes before your eyes. But this was like, what if not only your life flashed before your eyes, but the life of all the decisions you were supposed to make flashed before your eyes too? And so that's where these ghosts came in.
So I got one of the ghosts easy. One can be the old man that is going to get the transplant. He's like living in the basement on hospice and he's like, basically having to stay with this guy locked in this room. This guy has no idea what's going on, but he was a great musician, right? So you make it that he was also a great musician and he also had this family. The kid, you make it the kid accidentally stumbles into the basement where he's not supposed to go. It's the first one that I think is the difficult one to capture because those are clearly like, if he's with this guy who is exactly who he wanted to be and he's like blown away by it, right? And then the kid is the easy one as well, because, you know, does he want a kid? Does he not want a kid?
Yeah.
You can have it, the kid come in and be that beam of innocence that makes him think in a different way.
Yeah.
The first one is the one that I'm like, how do we fit her into a physical manifestation? I mean, it could be the physical manifestation of the, of actually the doctor and the sister or whatever, for some reason I've made them sisters. Physically asking him, like, why didn't you show up to donate?
Like, or it could it could be the seduction, which is like maybe he's having doubts about having left and he's at this bar in Albuquerque and you see one of the women come up and she ends up talking to him. He's sitting
The seduction would have to take place like at a bar the night before, because he plans on selling his vehicle. He's gonna dump the vehicle in Albuquerque, get the money to buy a train ticket out to LA. So one last night, he's like, I'm going to go have some fun at this bar across from the train station.
Yeah. So he's at a bar and he's having these doubts and he's looking at this glass. And then this girl's like, why'd you leave? And he turns and for a second you see his wife, but then he like realizes it's just this random bar fly. And he's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, well, everyone that's looking at their glass is running from something. So why'd you leave? And then so it kind of becomes
classic trope. I love it.
I love it.
Or, you know, the tan on your ring finger.
Yeah. The woman seducing him is the like life he left behind. It's his wife. And so he ends up deciding to go on this one last night with her because she looks like his wife or something.
And then she's going to take his kidney.
All of his organs.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big question is, do we want to go in the direction of the captors are literally going to do the operation and they are understandable because they have a personal investment in it? Or are we just going, this is purely his story? And because we can see their story through the lens of his eyes. He's being locked up in this basement.
I think that the idea is with him supposed to learn a lesson. I think you just got to go from his lens only.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, again, it also goes back to how's this going to end? Because...
Yeah.
So one of the few times in our career we're ever going to go Act 3, Act 2, Act 1.
See, I don't...
I'm trying to figure out how the message isn't just like, don't ever have needs or priorities that don't have to do with anybody else. Like, I get that it's don't be selfish.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the main one. I think most of those like ghost stories are typically showing you like, don't be an asshole, don't be selfish.
Yeah.
I mean, in that case, I feel like maybe there are two options. Either they let him go and they don't take his kidney and he goes back, or he shows up and he's back at his wife's place and he's clearly had this operation. She's like, oh my God, where were you? And he's like, the donation just took longer than I thought. Something dumb like that.
That's a terrible ending. I love it.
I don't love the idea of him signing up for a donation and then driving across country and then those people, if we're not going to show that,
yeah,
those people like just magically ending up at the same bar. I kind of like it being random.
What if these ladies, they know that their dad needs a kidney and these ladies will come and just like find anyone?
Yeah.
And maybe this isn't their first time that they've tried to do this.
Correct. I was going to say, like, he's definitely not their first victim.
And like maybe the first couple of guys, they weren't able.
Didn't work.
They either didn't work, weren't a match, the dude bled out on the floor, they cut the kidney wrong, something. You know, this is,
yeah,
this is an ongoing science experiment to save their ailing father.
Yeah. I think that's the route I would go, because then you could.
I agree.
They're not. I imagine the women, they're not like sociopaths. They're.
So here's a way to kind of step around that, because I was thinking about. Then they seem like sociopaths. But interesting thing is, he has an organ donor card, and that's how they justify it. Like,
mine was just going to be like, nobody tells you their blood type. Nobody's going to be like, hey, my name's Brian, I'm O negative. You know, like, that's not just something that, especially in the 70s.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, they could just have tried.
It's on a driver's license.
Is it?
We can lie.
Your blood type?
God.
Yeah, in the 70s, it said your blood type on your driver's license.
Who cares?
This gives them the opportunity to go through like one or two people before him. And it also explains why they're waiting on him, because they have to send it to get the blood test figured out, like what his blood type is.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he's waiting down there in the basement, because
right.
First couple of guys weren't the right blood type. And so they just offed those dudes because they couldn't get caught now.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't leave evidence. Yeah. So...
That's fair. I mean, I think you got that. I think you still have the question, like, are we murdering him?
I'm all for Jesse not making it in the end. In the end of the story being that the wrong decisions he made led him down this path.
Yeah. Like, I can't wrap my head around the idea that we're going to allow this guy who, after, you know, I think you said 7 years of marriage, just up and decides to move across country, we're going to allow him to get away with his life. Like, if we do, it's gotta be just...
I will say this.
Well, he doesn't get through it without losing a kidney.
Yeah, but it's a kidney. Like, I could go tomorrow and lose a kidney and live my life normally. Like, I'd pee more.
I'm going to go up and say this. If you don't have a happy ending, Brian, I could put, like, really good odds on it that it wouldn't be studio. It would be indie.
Yeah, that's. I think we're all...
If he lives, it's more studio.
It could be the feel-bad movie of the year.
Yeah. I would say if he lives, then the way that we do it is flash forward, like, 20-30 years, and he's in an Albuquerque retirement home, and he's basically like partially brain damaged because they couldn't let him just like get out of this unscathed, right? Like, if he's not going to die, then he can't just live a normal life unless he's going to escape somehow.
I mean, we could also do some finagling to say that they hadn't killed before, if we wanted it to be more... Like, he could be the first person to actually get this far.
So what about this? So he's left, and the wife is on his trail. She finds something that he's written down, even a train time, like Albuquerque to LA, 728 on so-and-so. And so she makes her way following him to find where he's at so she can whoop his ass.
Yeah, and finds him on the table.
I even had the idea of, like, what if, like, he's in his car, he's driving, and he's just, I mean, Jesse is doing it, man. And so he's, like, opening up a Kiss cassette, and he accidentally slices his finger on the cassette tape packaging. And so then when the police find his vehicle and the wife finds his vehicle, they're like, oh, there's blood in here. it looks like he was taken with force.
That would be pretty solid, because then it's an irony thing that he actually was, just not in the scenario that they maybe...
Yeah, they think he was taken from force from his vehicle. The wife finds the bar that he was at. Like, oh, yeah, I saw a guy that matched that description. He's sitting at that bar right there. Went home with Sally and Sally's sister.
Yeah, but then wouldn't she give up at that point unless she's just really dedicated to beating that ass? Like,
well, then the question of the infidelity is a question of, like, is there punishment for the infidelity?
Of course. She's going to find him.
Yeah, I almost like him. So I think my happy ending pitch would be there's two sisters. One of them's the doctor. The other is the seductress. The one that's been sent to seduce him slips something in his drink while he's not paying attention. He had no intention of doing anything with her. She was just a kindred spirit.
Maybe, like, he had full intentions of doing something with her, but she drugged him instead.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, like, I guess what I'm saying is, if you're trying to redeem this at the end some way, then she could help him escape after they've taken his kidney, but before they've offed him. And that could be how he gets out and then maybe, like, goes back. He goes back to his wife, happy ending. My way would be, yeah, he was fully gonna sleep with her. They drugged him. Nothing happened. And then, like, they just take him down this path of, we're gonna kill you. I'm really sorry about this.
You could do, after they've taken the kidney, that's when you have the third ghost, which is the kid, stumbles into the basement. He's all bloody. He sees, you know, what his life could have been. He convinces the kid to, like, help him out of the basement, and he could escape and have it be really difficult.
Yeah, I think the kid's the key there. I think being able to talk the kid into it.
Yeah, being able to talk the kid into helping him get out.
So he gives us that speech, which is basically to the kid, where, like, the audience is hopefully going to redeem him.
Yeah, so, like, I think that's what redeems him, is that he has all of these regrets when he's literally on his deathbed because he knows they're going to kill him.
Yeah.
But does that take the dark comedy out of it with that speech?
I mean, in that case, if you want to go comedy, the ending is he's playing really shitty guitar at a bar during an open mic night. And it's like he's living his dream, but he's just really terrible at it because he's just a mediocre guy who has delusions of grandeur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's a satisfying ending.
I mean, I think seeing him being able to go live his dream in the most middling way possible is a satisfying ending.
Yeah.
Because he's getting everything he wanted, but he's still a piece of shit. Like, he's still, it's just in a different way. Like, maybe he's a changed person, but he's living his best life. But, you know, your average Jesse, your average Joe, you know, like, he's doing what he wanted to do. Good for you.
So the question is, what happens to the wife? Is there any sort of tying up of those ends?
What if he goes back? He's obviously kidneyless. He has to explain to her everything that was going on and that he was going to leave, and she decides to leave him. And so wherever we originally set this, Atlanta or something like that, he decides to live a new life there, trying to make it as a guitar player or something. So he lost the wife. He's back where he started, but he's now doing what he wanted to do, quote unquote. So he's basically in the same exact scenario that he wanted to be in, wifeless, playing guitar for a living. It's just one of the worst case scenarios to do so.
I got it. He escapes. he goes back. We've never heard him play guitar at all through the entire film. He has this heartfelt conversation with his wife, explaining everything to her and just being really open. And she's like listening. And then he's like, I'm going to go to Atlanta, or I'm going to go and I want you to come with me to help me chase my dream. And then at the end, she's just like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Have you ever heard yourself play guitar? And he's like, no, I'm serious. And then we cut to, he does end up leaving her because she won't go with him. And she's just like, okay, take your stuff and go. And then the end of the movie is him playing really, really bad guitar at like the dingiest little open mic. And he's literally learned nothing because he's given up everything to pursue this dream and this career. And he thinks that he's really emboldened because this experience changed him and made him pursue his real dreams. But really, it's just like, you're a selfish asshole.
Yeah, I mean, that's the play to me.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm literally okay with this ending. I vote for this 10 out of 10.
If he's going to live, that's like, I don't want him to have learned or gained anything from the experience.
But he really thinks he has.
He thinks he's done the right thing.
Yeah.
But
this writer's room hates Jesse.
Well, no, it's just this idea that not everybody's redeemable. Like, your actions are going to set in motion this chain of events that you can't just redeem yourself from because you're Jesse. You're going to make it out.
Brian's never writing my biography, ever.
I'm just saying. Like,
you're Justin.
No, I think the idea that he's doing everything that he set out to do at the beginning, like leave his wife, go to a new city, and play guitar for a living, he's going to do all of those things, but it is just in the worst way possible. And yeah, the fact that we've never seen him play guitar and he is like can barely get through Thunderstruck, like, I think that would be hilarious.
I love it.
Yeah.
I also think we pepper it in at the beginning that that's partially why he left his wife. Like, in somewhere in the first 15 pages, you have him like tuning a guitar and it's late at night. And she's trying to so gently get him to stop. Like, she doesn't want him to play. She's like, it's late. We should really get to bed. You have work tomorrow. Yeah. And she's just trying to not say that he's bad. And so at first you're like, oh, wow, what a bitch. Like, she's awful. But then at the end you realize, like, no, she's just, she just has
ears. She was just honest.
Yeah.
I'm sold on that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty solid. Did we establish that the two women are sisters? One of them's a doctor. One of them is the seductress. And then also, have they done this before? Are they killers? Or...
I was voting they've done it before.
I was voting they've done it before because... and they were failed experiments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They finally got the one guy who was like, oh, where's your wife? Don't have one. Your kids? No. Making it on my own. You know, and so they're like, yeah. Bingo.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess if we're going dark comedy, then my question with them is, do we like them? Are we rooting for them to get this guy's kidney more than we're rooting for this guy?
I feel like it's almost better moment to moment with them. Like, you kind of like them, but you like, it's really fucked up what you're doing. But
I mean, they love their dad.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where it's like, you don't want to like them, but they have to at least have some redeemable qualities or be justified in some way.
So what if I guess like they're kind of where I'm getting lost still on this, on the rest of this pitch. What if their dad is just stupid loaded and they're trying to get his money, but he's about to die and they're not in the will. And so that's why, like, they're trying to get this kidney. Oh my God. Maybe they're thinking, like, we were bad daughters. If we can save his life, he'll ride us back into the will.
I said they needed to be likable.
It's like a hot rod. I'm going to save your life just so I can kick your ass.
Yes, exactly. Because I think if they're just like saving their dad, like, oh, we got to save dear old dad. What's the motivation in that? Save their dad?
Well, I'm sorry. What's the motivation of that? You know, extending somebody's life? I don't know. Just kill him. I don't know.
Okay, so if Jesse is mid-30s, I'm assuming that they're mid-30s as well. Like, the dad has lived a life at that point is what I'm getting
at. What if he's like 50, 60, 70? If you're 70, you can still live.
That's fair. I'm just trying to give them more of a motivation than
one
save my dad.
One of them could be pregnant. She's pregnant. She wants her dad to meet the kid.
Okay, there you go. I mean, I like them being gold diggers more, but...
I love the conversation between them, like, you know, if we can get him to live a few more years, he'll write us into the will.
Yeah, I think that's hilarious.
He'll see what we've done.
We saved his life. He has to write us into the will now. He has to give us some of that
I mean,
money.
Are these people mobsters? I feel like the only way.
Oh, my God.
Well, the question is, like, can one of the sisters make that comment? The other sister be like, oh, my God, shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that could be a very, yeah. One of them is trying to do it because she loves her dad. She doesn't
I think
care.
One of them loves her dad. The other one's, like, stupid and doesn't understand what's going on. I think the seductionist can maybe be the stupid one.
I mean, I think if you're going dark comedy and you're going like, I'm imagining just these bumbling, like they're really smart, but maybe not in this realm. That they're way out of their element here. And so like, what are they trying to get out of this? Like, what is their, I don't know.
In that case, you don't make her a doctor. You make her a veterinarian.
Oh my God. Yes.
Danny coming through with the doctors.
She's an equine veterinarian.
Yes. I think that's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think you could make that joke. She's like, I know what I'm doing. You've only done this twice, and you usually do this on cats.
Yeah. To me, that is the funniest dark comedy play, is that they're trying to save their dad so they can get back in the will, and she is not even a doctor.
I can do this. Yeah, I can cut him open.
Sure.
I'm on board with that.
They say, you know, you see the world through your own keyhole. And so I've never been around a lot of guns or violence. I don't know how to fly a helicopter. So a lot of my story ideas are very drama driven and character driven. So the idea that something I came up with has now been manipulated and twisted into this really funny, dark comedy kind of thing that I could have never come up with myself. Is really, really entertaining.
Yeah. And where the counterpoint to that is, Danny and I are so twisted, but I don't think either of us would have come up with the idea of like this guy on a operating table,
no.
Seeing the ghost like and everything. So like giving us that, it was a great melding. I'm so absolutely here for it.
Yeah.
All right, Danny's going to go to the log line, and we'll be right back, and she'll pitch us a log line, and we'll go through and decide if we're going to save the cat or scratch it. All right, Danny, we'll see you in a bit.
Hey, everyone. Just a quick reminder, as always, that these podcasts are for entertainment purposes only. These ideas are fresh, new, and sometimes submitted by you. Anything said is not meant to infringe on the copyright of any existing work of art, and everything is thought of during this show without any previous influence. If it sounds like something you've already seen or heard, what can I say? That's Hollywood, all out of fresh ideas. Thanks and enjoy.
And we're back. Danny's going to pitch us a log line. We'll go around the room and decide if we're going to save the cat or scratch it. We'll start with Danny, and we'll finish with me. All right, Danny, take it away.
Pack of smokes. 7 years into his picture-perfect, predictable, and entirely underwhelming marriage, run-of-the-mill accountant and wannabe rock star Jesse decides to go out for a pack of smokes and never come back. On his road trip to L.A., however, he's seduced and kidnapped by a veterinarian and her sister who need to steal his organs to save their dear old dad. Can Jesse escape from Albuquerque with both his kidneys, or will his selfish choices ultimately be the death of him?
I still vote the latter.
All right. I guess I will go first. I save it. I would probably go, if I were personally to write this, go in a slightly different direction with more of like an A plot and B plot simultaneously and kind of look into the veterinarian and her sister too, because I think that's really fascinating, but that's just me. I think it's a really, really cool concept, and I think there's a lot of different ways you could do this, and I'm glad that we went dark comedy with it.
Yeah, I save it as well, but Danny, I thought that's kind of what we were doing, kind of going in the veterinarian and the sister, because they're saving their dad so that they can take his money. I think that's super...
Yeah, but I would probably do like... A plot, B plot, like they would be a stronger B plot. Like there would be scenes without Jesse in them.
Yeah. Well, see, in my head, as I was trying to like develop them a little bit further, that's where I was intending to go with that as well. Because I do think, I mean, I think that the A plot with Jesse, especially the actual physical manifestations of these life he left behind, life he abandoned, and the life that could have been, you know, as he's dealing with those, I want to see the comedic side still. Like as this drama's hitting, I want to laugh at this veterinarian trying to get medical supplies to do this procedure and not knowing what the hell she needs, you know, like what size gauze do I need to, you know?
Is it about kidney sized?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Do you think this is good? Like she's at Walgreens or something or whatever the 70s equivalent of that is. I definitely save it. Andrew, I think this is absolutely hilarious. I'm thinking that quirky dark comedy for sure, and that's where I'm leaning, and I 100% love it. Save it.
All right, Andrew, what do you think?
I'm going to save it just on the ideas that all of you came up with for it, you know. I came to you with this idea that I hadn't necessarily fleshed out and was not going dark comedy, at least in my mind, because I don't think that way. But hearing all of your ideas and fleshing it out to where it is now, I would love to watch this movie. It reminds me a lot of some of the Coen brothers kind of dark comedy or Richard Linklater's Bernie. I would definitely love to see this movie.
Definite strong Bernie vibes. That is one of the best comps that we've gotten for What's in My Head. Yeah, that's good.
Three strong saves. All right. I will save it. A rare save for me. I do like it a lot. I do think once you start really writing it, it's going to be funnier too. I think there's a lot of concepts in there, but I think like once you get to the nitty gritty of the dialogue, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for like a lot of comedy moments. I think the veterinarian thing was like a huge flip for me. Like once that was dropped in there, I was like, this is going to be way funnier than like even when I originally thought it would be. So I think it's awesome. I think Danny and Brian communicate so well that they didn't even know they were doing A plot, B plot. So like, this is just a great writing team we have here. But yeah, I save it 100%. I think it's awesome. And I really do appreciate you bringing a new idea for us to kind of like play with and ultimately bring to something you like, which is awesome. So
yeah.
And I will say, I do think it's hilarious because Justin and I agree. I think the veterinarian is what flipped it. And I was like, this is freaking hilarious. But my favorite thing about that is that Danny kind of threw it away. She was like, we might as well just make her a veterinarian. And Andrew was like, yep.
So, oh my gosh. I
love it. Yeah. Truly love it. Awesome. Well, we will finish this week like we do every week with a what are you watching? And I actually want to start with you, Andrew. So what is something that you watched this past week?
You know, I've gone back and I've rewatched all of the Linklater Before films, the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight. At least the first two. I discovered Before Sunrise. I think I was a freshman in high school, and then Before Sunset came out my freshman year in college. And I, to this day, like my ideas of romance have been incredibly changed and molded by Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy and Richard Linklater. And then as I got older and watching Before Midnight and seeing these two people who we thought were and are, you know, completely in love, these fictionalized characters, seeing them have arguments and regular life issues, it grounded the whole thing for me too.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the few movies that like did a great job of waiting many years and still like following that process. The same, such a similar storyline and like playing like it's so incredible to see like two characters be able to like make a story technically that long in a movie series.
Yeah, to be able to come back like every 9 years.
Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just see like a little snapshot.
You hit the nail on the head with like just the way that they capture those moments in a relationship and those moments in life in a relationship and how it's really powerful. I think they were all three just so incredibly well done at capturing romance and what it is at that stage in your life. So yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not to the Before Midnight, I think, stage yet, but yeah. Well, I will go next. I actually watched the Mindy Kaling film Late Night with Emma Thompson, Mindy Kaling, where she is a talk show host and they're trying to push her out. She hires Mindy Kaling as a writer and kind of turns things around. It was a pretty solid movie. What I really liked about it was kind of the peek inside the writer's room. I thought that was really fun. Very few movies, even 30 Rock really didn't get into it as much as kind of the process and the day-to-day minutia of a writer in writer's room. So that was really fun. And then also just, you know, I think Mindy Kaling's adorable, hilarious. Like I could watch her in anything. So really a big fan of that. Another thing that I watched that I wanted to mention was something very out of my realm. It was a documentary about hunting and it was called Stars in the Sky. And it's basically, so for anyone that knows me, I've literally never even held a gun in my life. I support if somebody wants to own a hunting rifle, et cetera, I fully support you. I have never held a gun in my life.
Boy, I thought you was from Texas.
I am. I don't know. There's something about holding a gun that like, I don't know. I think it's a personal thing. I think I don't know what I would do with that. So,
son, there ain't nothing more powerful in your life than putting that powerful 22 right there in your hands, man.
I will do that in a video game. And I think that's about the extent that I will take that powerful 22.
That was a real manly statement there.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. No, so I watched this documentary about hunting and it was really just about it was funny. The guy that recommended it to me was like, this will change your thoughts on hunting. And in reality, it just grounded my thoughts even more, which is like, I don't like guns, but if you were using it for a hunting purpose and you're using every ounce of that animal and et cetera, and like you respect that animal and respect the act that you're doing to that animal, more power to you. I can't do it. And that's why I don't hunt. But like, I actually really enjoyed the documentary because it firmed up my beliefs on how I feel about hunting and separating that from gun control. So Stars in the Sky. I thought it was a pretty solid documentary. Danny, what did you watch this week?
All right. This week I watched the first season of End of the Fucking World, End of the Effing World. I don't know what they actually called it in the writer's room, so who knows? But it is a really funny, dark comedy that really hit its stride after episode 3. Up until episode 3, I was not really impressed. But spoiler alert, after the first murder, I was like, yes. I was like, this is so funny. You know, hot take, I think it could have been a movie.
Oh, yeah.
To be honest.
I think it was designed that way.
Yeah, I think it kind of shows, like, it just feels like it should have been a movie that they just broke out into 20-minute episodes and filled with a little fluff. But really good content. I had a really big rage fest with my roommate about how they're trying to make everything look like her on Netflix. Everything is, like, warm and slightly undersaturated and yellow. But again, after the third episode and they killed somebody, they stopped doing that. And I was more into it. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm on IMDb trying to figure out what episode it was that changed it for me as well. And it was ironically episode 3. So
yep. That's why it should have been a movie, because at least if you're in the theater, you're gonna watch the entire thing.
Yeah. I didn't watch season 2. I just thought season 1 ended perfectly for me.
Yeah. My roommate and I literally after the end of that last episode, we were like, nope, we're not watching season 2. They're gonna fuck it up. There's no way.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they did the way they did it was fine. It was just like, I saw the preview for season 2 and I was like, not necessary. Not necessary.
Awesome. Justin, what did you watch?
Oh, real fun over here. Rewatched a TV show because I've been so busy. Rewatching the TV show Covert Affairs because I have nothing to do with my life besides work. Yeah, so it was one of those like, I don't know. They did a good job. It was like one of those few. It was like during Alias, like those. There was a few female lead show action shows, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Again, Andrew, cannot thank you enough for being on this episode. Absolutely loved it. Your book, Palo Duro, nominated for a YA Novel of the Year, number one Amazon bestseller. Like, thank you so much for hopping on. It's been awesome. We're going to steal this.
The pleasure is absolutely mine. I appreciate the time. Thank you for having me on.
All right, Andrew, tell the audience where they can find you.
And tell us about your new book.
Sure. So you can find me online, www.writerbrandt.com. That's W-R-I-T-E-R, brandt.com. And then you can find me at writerbrandt on all the big socials. My next book comes out May 18th. It's called Mixtape for the End of the World. And it's a high school romance coming-of-age novel set in the last 3 months of 1999. About a new kid in town who starts a band, falls in love with the girl next door, and thinks the world's going to end thanks to Y2K.
I love that I can make my spouse get me that for my birthday, because my birthday is May 27th, so yep.
Pre-order now, right?
Pre-order now.
Pre-orders are live now. My website, we do have a, we're only doing a limited run of 50 special edition hardcovers.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, and, nice.
Sweet.
A portion of each sale from the hardcover is going back to literacy campaign, children's literacy campaigns, specifically a nonprofit organization called StoryBridge that provides books to underprivileged children in the Texas Panhandle.
That is awesome. Yeah, that is really cool. Andrew, thank you so much again. Cannot stress enough how fun this episode was, how fun the direction we took it was. And so I'm glad you let us toy with that a little bit. Ryder Brandt, Palo Duro, Mixtape for the End of the World. Thank you so much. As always, I am Brian Hayes. You can find me on, I like your phrase, the big socials. I'm stealing that. You can find me on the big socials at Bredacted.
I'm Danny Hanks. You can find me on the big socials as Official Danny Hanks.
I'm Jess Eugene. You can find me on all the usual socials.
at Justin Eugene.
Yeah. Everyone course, already knows.
If you can, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CanWeSavePod. Like and subscribe to our podcast and leave us a rating on Apple Pods. It really helps people find us. We really love you guys. Send us any comments, concerns, messages. If you have any pitches, if you hate us, let us know. We love you anyway.
Don't hate us.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week, guys. Everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.